This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. It's your weekly blitz with Chris, keeping you in the game.
Are you ready to supercharge your auto repair business? This is Coach Chris Cotton from AutoFix Auto Shop Coaching. The weekly blitz is where industry expertise and business innovation collide, revving your engines for the week ahead. Every episode has game-changing insights, up-to-the-minute industry updates, and practical tips to shift your business into high gear. We're talking about stuff you didn't even know you didn't know, people. Make sure to check out one of the other great podcasts on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Big shout out to our awesome sponsor, Shop Marketing Pros, top tier marketing for not just any audience, but the right audience. Shop Marketing Pros connects your European or diesel repair shop with car enthusiasts who value expertise, the auto repair experience, and a great relationship. Go pro with Shop Marketing Pros, your ticket to top tier results. Find out how they can fuel your success at shopmarketingpros.com/Chris. So here we are, Kimberly. This is episode 160, and the original cut we did was episode 150. So if you haven't gone back and listened to that, you can, if you want to catch up where we're at. So we are titling this loosely Catching Up with Kimberly or Follow Up. This is the follow-up episode to the kidney donation. So in the previous episode, we talked about everything that we did running up to it. We've had the actual donation, and what are we, 6 weeks past now?
It'll be 7 weeks on Thursday.
7 weeks on Thursday. I don't even know where all the time went. I don't even know how 10 episodes elapsed either, but this is amazing. So even people that talked to me last week still ask me this week how she's doing. So who better than my lovely wife, Kimberly, to come in here and talk a little bit, talk about the donation and kind of catch us up. So how are you doing?
Physically, I'm doing really well. Mentally, I'm doing really well, but I have started to notice I do have limitations still. I want to get back. I want to be like I was before surgery. I could just go and do anything at the gym I wanted to. And now I have to really be careful on how much weight I'm lifting. I have to be careful the classes I'm taking because I am still feeling throughout the day. In the morning, I'm great. It's usually in the afternoon and it's my back. And strangely enough, it just starts to ache. It doesn't really hurt. It just aches a little bit. And so I just have to remind myself, you're only, 6 weeks out of surgery. You have to give yourself some grace. But all of my incisions from the surgery are healing great. I haven't had any issues with that. A week and a half after the surgery, my doctor released me to get back to normal activities. He did say, don't lift anything over 30 pounds and, don't do any kickboxing classes or, classes like that. But he said, yes, you are looking great. You just resume your normal activities.
And so that's where we're at now. And I'm going to rewind here just a little bit and talk about, kind of the run up to surgery and everything. But I kind of knew this was how this was going to go because I know you like to push things and they're pretty much everything they've told us, like, okay, this is going to happen here. This is going to happen here. And they said it's going to take 6 months for you to get back to quote unquote normal. And I think you forget that sometimes that they told you 6 months and you're like, I know you're superwoman, but sometimes, you got to slow down.
I do forget that I've donated a kidney. I literally do forget. Because physically you can't tell. It's all like internal. And if you didn't know me, you wouldn't know that that's what happened. So yes, I do have a problem with containing myself and I'm humbled just about every day. My body says, okay, that's enough. Stop. So yes.
And I will tell everybody that's listening, she's like swimming on Tuesdays. She's doing her kickboxing now. She rides her bicycle to the gym. So she's pretty much getting after it, maybe not quite as hard, but she's doing great. And I love you so much for doing this for your brother. And I'm amazed every day at the fact that you could do it because I know I couldn't. There's no way. So last time we talked to people, we were kind of giving them the rundown of the way we thought things were going to happen. And so I kind of wanted to follow up on what actually happened, like the run up to the surgery. If you can maybe just go back and tell us, like, you and I drove to Tulsa. We got into the Airbnb and kind of just take it from there a little bit, and we'll just work forward from there.
So 2 days after we made it to Tulsa, we had a follow-up. Basically, they wanted to retest everything. So my brother and I both at the same time went to the hospital, and we did an EKG. We had blood tests. We did all kinds of different stuff. At that time, they gave me information that I was going to need for the surgery. Knowing that, I may not still be a match. Something else could have gone wrong between that appointment and the donation, which was a week away. So even though we are doing this and they're giving me all instructions for the surgery, it's still not a guarantee. And so we had to keep thinking about that. So we had the appointments pretty much all day, you know, met with the nephrologist again and the kidney center. Again, they're saying, you know, you can still back out. This is still your choice. We won't tell your brother any, you know, just, you know, something else happened and not that you would have pulled out. And it never even crossed my mind to not go through with the donation. It is what it is. I was going to do it no matter what. So then after that Wednesday, it was pretty much just a waiting game until we heard from my kidney advocate the next Tuesday. So we did all the testing on that Wednesday. We had to wait until the next Monday, and I had to have a COVID test. And then after that, it was again, we were just waiting. And then Tuesday afternoon, they finally called and said, okay, all the cross matches are still good. Everybody's healthy. COVID was negative. So we're good to go. So even though we thought we were good to go and the surgery was scheduled, it's never really a done deal till the final, okay, everybody's good to go. So then it was just another, see, that was Tuesday. So the rest of Tuesday, all day Wednesday, I had to not eat or drink anything. I couldn't eat anything on that Wednesday. It was an all liquid diet. And then after midnight on that night, I couldn't have anything to eat or drink through the surgery. So I'd been fasting. I've been doing some of that. So I was comfortable with that. It was still hard. I was still, you know, I still wanted to eat, but I made it just fine. But I was getting very antsy. I wanted to get it done. Everything was good. I'm like, why do we have to wait? But that's when we had it scheduled for that Thursday. So it was just a waiting game at that point. So I tried to get out and walk a couple times a day just to get fresh air, get my mind off of it, which helped. And then my mom and dad showed up that Wednesday evening as well. So that helped me take my mind off of it too. So they came over and stayed for another week and a half after that, just to take care of me and make sure I was doing okay. And basically to say, hey, you don't need to be doing that, but everything's good to go. We wake up at 4 o'clock on Thursday morning. My brother and sister-in-law actually come pick us up, so we don't have too many vehicles at the hospital. And we make it to the hospital. We get all checked in. And then they called me back first. And that was it. That was like, okay. That was the point where I was like, okay, this is real. And for me, until something happens, it's not really real. When they called me back, my brother gave me the biggest hug and said, I want to thank you so much for doing this for me. So he gave me the big hug. It was hard for him to let go, but he let go. And they took me back to my room.
I'm going to stop you for just a second right there. So if anybody out there is listening has never experienced this, I knew where we were going and I had seen the room before. I really didn't know kind of my part in all this, which is not super important other than just support. But, you know, in hindsight, that I don't think they prepared us for that day, or they didn't prepare me, because we walk in there and they're doing, I think, 96 surgeries that same day. Everything from kidney transplants to heart transplants to, there was a lady there that was there to get her leg amputated from diabetes, pacemakers, everything. And all this is happening at once. Every person individually has their own team, the donor, the recipient. And it was really, really something. It was interesting to watch. And again, like Kimberly said, we got there, you know, 4:30 in the morning, and they were done with all the surgeries by 5:30 that afternoon. They had like everybody off to recovery. The rooms were empty, but basically we got like a little cubicle for the family to sit in, and they called us every hour to update us. The nurse did, to let us know that we're okay, that Kimberly's okay, not us okay, we're just fine, and kind of keep us apprised of all the situations that's going. So that's kind of what I was doing during the day, sitting, waiting, managing family, and things like that. So, okay. So you saw your brother. I think I was back there with you until somewhere around that point. And then the nurse finally says, well, okay, you can't back out at this point. We're a go. We're go for liftoff. So I give you a hug and a kiss, take your glasses or put it in the bag, and they wheel you out. So if you want to pick it back up from there, then that would be great.
So right before she says, okay, we're good to go, the surgeon comes in. He's like, okay, there's, you know, he marks the spot, literally marks the spot where things are going to happen. And so then the two little ER ladies come in and they wheel me down the hall. We were supposed to have rooms right next to each other, but that didn't happen. So as they were wheeling me back to the ER, the operating room, I saw they paused at my brother's door, and that's when it got me. I had been fine. I hadn't cried or anything until that point. And I paused and I said, okay, I'll see you on the other side. And he said, thank you again. I love you. And I'm crying as she's wheeling me back. I'm fine. Nobody else is with me. It's just the poor ladies listening to me cry, wheeling me back to the operating room. But once I'm through the doors, it happened so fast. They wheeled me in. They got the table ready that I was going to be on. They scooted me over. They laid me on my side. They put the oxygen mask on me. And I didn't even count to 10. And I was out. I don't remember anything after that. The next time I woke up was in the recovery. I had lots of blankets on me because I think I was shivering because it was cold. I just remember I had two nurses continuously checking on me. How are you doing? Do you need this? Do you need that? And the only thing I said was, where's my husband? Can I see my husband? I think that's at the point they went and got you and brought you back. The problem was, I had to stay in recovery for quite some time. Our surgery was early. And so it lasted, 4 hours, I think, something like that.
They pretty much told us this is a 4-hour surgery. Because of the staging and everything, I guess they give you like an hour head start, and then they started on your brother, and then they've got your kidney, which the doctor said, hey, it looks pink. It's great. We cleaned it up. And so basically they wheel you out to recovery and then clean up the kidney, get it put into your brother, and then he's off and going. But we had trouble getting into the room that, not I guess ICU or recovery, but your actual room that you stayed in for 2 nights. So you were done by 11, and I think we had you in your room by 5. So we kind of spent more time sitting around trying to get you into another room than the operation took.
Yeah. Luckily, I slept a lot during that time, so it wasn't too bad for me. I was just down there for a long time. So not a big deal. They got me up into a room, and actually, I was hungry when we finally did make it up to the room. So I think we had tried to order something through the hospital, but the time had passed when they were delivering meals and stuff. Did you bring me something or did I? I don't even remember what I had that evening.
I think I got you. I was able to get you something that you could eat.
I don't think I was very hungry, but I wanted something small. So,
and to give everybody like the idea of the recovery room you were in, basically it's just like a long row of beds with like 10 to 15 slots on either side. And when I first went down there, you didn't have anybody next to you. So then we got you some ice water. I think we got you some pudding then or something. But because of HIPAA regulations, they were bringing other people down on either side of you and they had me leave. So we got you to the room and kind of settled in a little bit. We were trying to manage your pain. I think one of the important things, if you're listening and you're going to go through this out there, they talk about this, it's not a phantom pain, but what happens is where the kidney was, and they insert these robot fingers inside your body and they blow up your abdomen with nitrogen. And they do this with a robot. They try to get all the air out, but they can't. And what happens is the air or the nitrogen that's left pushes on your diaphragm. And when that happens, your body thinks your shoulder hurts. So it has this like tremendous pain in your shoulder. I've seen Kimberly give birth. I've seen her do all kinds of stuff in 25 plus years that we've been together. And I've never heard her yell in pain or anything like that. And maybe that's what had happened. I'd gone and got you something to eat. And then I went and got me something to eat. And when I was coming back, I heard you hollering down the hallway.
Yeah, you hadn't probably been gone 20, 30 minutes, maybe, and the pain all of a sudden hit me so hard. So I pushed the nurse's button, and it took them longer than I wanted to them for them to respond. But they finally responded, and they said, "Can we help you?" And I said, "I need something for the pain. I'm absolutely excruciating right now." And they said, "What on the scale of what to what?" I'm like, "I am above a 10. I mean, this is awful." And so it took him a little bit, and then he could hear me moaning and groaning down the hallway. And I think he sprinted to the room after he could hear me, but it just hurt so bad. And it's the strangest thing. I don't get it, but it wasn't just one shoulder. It was across my back, right at my clavicle. And it just hurt so bad until the pain medication finally kicked in. Initially, I had only wanted to stay one night in the hospital, but everybody was like, just see how you feel, see how you're doing. Well, the next day, the doctor, another one comes in and he checks me over and he looks at me and he's like, yeah, you're spending another night. He could tell the pain on my face, and it wasn't constant, but it was just enough for him to say, yeah, we're going to up the dosage of your pain medication and you're staying. I'm like, okay. So, but after they upped the dosage, it was much better and much more manageable.
So out of all the things that they didn't tell us, this was kind of like the big aha moment or lesson, not right then. So they wanted me to get her up and have her walking like at 8 p.m. that night. And so that happened. I think we took you for a walk before this happened.
Yeah.
But what nobody told us was about 30 minutes before you get up to walk, call a nurse, have them give you the pain medication. That way, when you're sore and hurting after the walk, you've already been medicated and you're good to go. So I think we walked you that night. I think we walked you a couple of times that next day. And then I think the nurse that came in the following night was the one that was like, hey, you guys should be taking pain medication before you walk. And nobody told us that up until then. And that's like some Ron White. That's good information to know, right? That would have been a little handy tidbit for people to tell us. And we'll get into your brother a little bit. So I think there's like two huge pieces of information that nobody told us. And that was the first one.
I'm not getting up and walking down the hallway. This is just getting up out of the bedroom, walking to the door and turning around, going to the chair and back. I didn't even leave my room, I don't think, the first day. So,
yeah, I mean, that's it. And then your brother got done. He was in ICU for a night and they got him. He actually hit his last room was right across the hall and he only stayed one more night than you stayed, I think, right?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah,
because it's way easier, it's crazy. It's way easier on the recipient than it is the donor for this part of it. Now, all the after part of it, the medication, everything is tough on them. Anything else about the time in the hospital that you want to bring up or that we haven't thought of?
No, I will also say that that first night they would come in and, you know, nurses knew do what they need to do.
But yeah, that, take my that vitals, was ridiculous. Yeah.
And I mentioned that and I was like, I didn't hardly sleep at all. And so the next night they actually put a note on my board outside my room or somewhere that said, do not disturb between this time and this time. Was super helpful. So I highly recommend you tell them to do that unless they absolutely need to come in for some reason. That's have them do that.
Right. So I was sleeping in the room with her at the same time. I'm still a little bit salty about the pullout chair I got versus the couch Jennifer, or excuse me, your sister-in-law got onto. But anyway, so they're waking up both of us probably hourly. And so about the time you get comfortable and go to sleep, they're waking you up to check your vitals every hour. So definitely tell them, hey, let's skip the vitals. There's some labs and stuff that they needed to do, but let's try to let us sleep and move on. So we get you home and you want to talk about the recovery in the first like week or two?
So I had been in a Facebook group, the Living Donor Facebook group. And one of the things they recommended for immediately after surgery was like a compression belt or a compression thing around your waist. And so we had bought one. I will tell you that thing, I think, helped me tremendously. I would wear it during the day and then take it off at night and let my body relax. I couldn't sleep. It was uncomfortable to sleep the first couple nights because I couldn't sleep on my side for very long or my back. And it just was uncomfortable because of the whole surgery. After a couple of days, though, and wearing the belt and getting up and walking as much as I felt like I could, it helped a lot and I felt a lot better. The scars on my abdomen started healing very well, didn't have any issues at all with the places where they did the surgery. So that was really good. I did push it a little bit sometimes and I did pay for it a couple times. I would just try to walk further than I thought I could, and I would get back and my back would just ache and ache. And I didn't take any medication unless I absolutely had to. And there was one time I was on the couch and I was like, "Hey, mom, I need some medication." She's like, "You overdid it, didn't you?" I'm like, "Yep." And that's happened one other time since we got back home here in Colorado, but I've been really trying to be careful and I haven't taken any medication for probably 5 weeks now. A good recover, I think, for me. What helped it was I was in fairly good shape. I, you know, was working out a lot. And that was the one of the things he said. He's like, "Because you're in such good shape, you're going to be able to bounce back faster than someone who wasn't."
Right. And I'll say the other thing. So this spring, we knew we were going to have some things. So we had two things that I had to schedule and then basically leave 4 or 5 months completely open. And the two things that I had to schedule, one was we had a peer group meeting after your surgery. So I had to leave. That's another reason why your mom and dad were there. And then our daughter Piper is in a play and I have to go to STX for that. So the two things that we couldn't move on our schedule, it got stuff scheduled on top of it. But one of the things, funny thing, I think, from your mom and dad being there is if your mom thought you'd left on a walk too long, then your dad would come bebopping down the street looking for you to make sure that you're okay.
Yeah. And sometimes they actually with me as well, they're like, "Okay, don't want to push it too hard," but I think they were there just in case. And I felt like at the time, I'm like, "Man, I feel like I'm in jail." But that's not what it was at all. They were just making sure that I was okay, that I wasn't overdoing it. And they were just trying to take care of me the best way. They wouldn't even hardly let me do laundry. I mean, they wouldn't let me cook, do anything. They wanted me to just relax and take care of myself and my body. It was hard for me to let them do that, being the age that I am now. But I'm glad that they were there. And I'm glad that they took great care of me.
Right. So the other thing is that everybody asked me is, how's your brother doing?
So immediately after the surgery, he was doing okay. He had tons of medications. A lot of them were just for right after the surgery. A lot of those he's been able to come off of, which is really good. What we didn't think about, which is really kind of obvious, and something else that they didn't really tell us, is I'm not a large individual. I'm barely 5'6", and I'm smaller body than my brother. And granted, he's only like 6 foot, 6'1", but he's probably 50, 60 pounds heavier than I am. So my kidney was smaller than his kidneys had been. And so initially they thought the kidney from me was failing, that it was his body was rejecting it. Well, come to find out, the reason that it was doing that was because it was smaller than what he was used to. And so his body was trying to flush a lot more stuff through it than what I had been previously putting through it. And so they had to adjust his medications and, you know, really crack down and say, "Hey, you have to understand that the kidney we put in you is smaller than what your body can handle. And so you're going to have to really be careful with this." I don't know why I didn't even think about that before their surgery, but I totally understand it. So there for a couple of weeks, we were a little bit on edge with the whole testing, and they did a biopsy of the kidney and all kinds of stuff. And we were really worried. But I can tell you, as of last week, which was 6 weeks, the doctor said he's doing very well. Again, he's come off a lot of the medications they put him on originally after the surgery, and he's still restricted on what he can do, who he can be around, but he is doing better. So he's not there yet. It's going to be a long road for him. He's going to be on medications his entire life, but every day is a good day.
Well, and so that was one of my concerns. And that was, you know, out of all the people they assigned to you, they assigned mental health people and dietitians and advocate this, advocate that. And my concern was, what happens if this doesn't work for you from a mental standpoint? And I know again, they didn't tell us that this could be the issue. Kind of the information we were getting was he may be rejecting it. And, you know, I was keeping a close eye on you to make sure to see how you handle that. And then to see if you, because we had conversations like, I was like, hey, you know, what happens? Like, how are you mentally? And what happens if this doesn't work? And I know you said you were okay. And I get that you were probably mostly okay, but I don't know that I believed you that much because I know how you are. But, and if you just think about it, this is, of course, is one of the things that I learned. So if you're a healthy person with two good kidneys, all of your blood in your body cycles through your kidneys, I think 5 to 6 times a day. So now you've got entire blood flow 6 times a day that's going through one kidney and a smaller kidney. So I think they went in, they did a biopsy, and then I want to say they like went in and injected steroids directly into the kidney to help it out. And again, so for now, it seems to be doing great. Brother's doing good. So what's next for you at this point?
I will go have a 6-month checkup, and we'll be in Oklahoma anyway for some football games. So we had planned, we'll just go ahead and have the 6-month checkup in Tulsa. I could do it here in Durango, but they already have all my records and everything. They know what's going on. So we're just going to plan on doing that. And then after the 6 month, then it gets to the year point. So we'll have another checkup at the year point. And then if everything is good, then I'll have another checkup at 2 years. I do need to see my general practitioner regularly, and he's been kept up to date with everything. So everything that's happened in Tulsa, they have relayed to him. So he has all of my records and everything. So yeah, I just have to periodically get, you know, tested to make sure things are functioning correctly, that I'm not having any issues. So yeah, at this point, other than, you know, just worrying about, I don't worry. I just consciously know in the back of my mind, he's always going to have issues. I just need to check in with him and make sure, see how he's doing. And I think that's hard for him because he's not a big talker. But you know what? I'm his big sister. He's got my kidney. So I'm going to check in with him and make sure my bean is doing okay. It's a pretty cool club that I'm in, you know, the One Bean Club. I didn't really look at it too much beforehand, but that's a pretty cool little club I'm in now. And I didn't even realize there was months dedicated to organ donation or even a kidney donation. So that's pretty cool.
And then I think you found out like the day before the donation or the day after that they have like a special Olympics every year for people that have donated organs. So I haven't got confirmation from her yet, but look for Kimberly to be the gold medal javelin thrower in the donation Olympics here coming up next year or something like that.
I don't think so, but we'll see. I think it's pretty cool that they have that. A select group of people. It's not everybody in the United States or, you know, the world that donated a kidney or received an organ from somebody. So I'm in a pretty elite little group now. I thought that's pretty cool.
So is there anything else that we haven't covered that you would like to add?
Not really, other than I think I said it at the end of the last podcast. Go look into organ donation if you are interested in those things. And if you'd like to donate, I'm sure there's lots of organizations out there, whether it be in your area or nationwide, that you can donate money to in order to fund research regarding organ donation. It's pretty cool how far the kidney donation has come in the last probably 10 years. I can only imagine what it was like to have a rib broken and go in from your back and, you know, all the recovery after that. So mine was so easy compared to that. So if you are interested, please go check out organ donation or donate to whatever cause you feel is right for your heart.
And I will tell you, like, the reason why I did this podcast, and again, thank you for doing this. I know this is the last thing on earth you wanted to do. You also said you would never do a podcast with me. And so, I got you to do two now, although we don't have any video of it. We've got all the audio of it. So thanks so much for doing that. And if there's anybody out there, I know you can listen to the podcast now and there's other places for you, but if you need to talk to somebody and, you know, figure out if this is a process for you or something, feel free to reach out to me or I can put you in touch with Kimberly and we're more than happy to help you and then go through that. There's all kinds of things. You can be a direct donor. If you have somebody that you love or anybody else that you want to donate to, you can. There's like trading donors. So like if Kimberly wasn't a match to her brother, she could have given a kidney to somebody else and They could have had somebody, a loved one, donate to Ryan. There's all kinds of switching and things to go out. And I would also tell you, this is a side topic, most states, if you're not a registered organ donor on your driver's license, and that's something you want to do, heaven forbid that ever happened, but at least maybe somebody else can carry on after you can't anymore. So that's another option for you as well. So again, thank you, Kimberly, for joining me. I know this was hard for you. I love you so very much. Thanks for doing this for your brother.
Thanks, honey.
A big shout out to our listeners. Your dedication to growth fuels our passion. And let's not forget our fantastic sponsor, Shop Marketing Pros, who makes sure the show is accessible to you. Where quality meets visibility, Shop Marketing Pros ensures your European or diesel repair shop stands out in a crowded market. Thanks for tuning into the Weekly Blitz. Remember, it's time to rise, grind, and keep your mindset positive. Until next time, this is Chris Cotton signing off.
You've been listening to the Weekly Blitz with Coach Chris Cotton on the AftermarketRadioNetwork.com. Follow Chris on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Chris is all for advancing the aftermarket.